We are super lucky and privileged to have Thea Hobson here this morning. Thea worked at SPPC for several years and is currently earning her doctorate in divinity at Fuller Seminary. Thea will be speaking to us about making motherhood your mission and finding your own personal passion alongside your dedication to your family and children. So please welcome me in welcoming Thea. Thank you for coming.
Hi, thanks for having me. I think my title, it's on. My title that I was handed was Missional Motherhood, but really what I'm gonna talk about is being a missional family, because the truth is that whatever we all do, we do with everybody that we're with. You do it with your kids, you do it around the stuff that you're already doing. This morning I'm here, but I also made breakfasts, got kids dressed, took them to school. We'll pick them up in an hour, and that's what we do. So everything that we do is a little bit integrated back and forth in how we are with our families. I am doing my doctorate at Fuller in leadership development. And my favorite quote is from Dr. Bobby Clinton, and it's, "A Christian leader is a person with God-given capacity and responsibility who is influencing a specific group of people, of God's people, for God's purpose." And the truth is, every single one of us is a leader. You are a leader because you have God-given capacity, you have God-given responsibility to be influencing a certain group of people. Now, the truth is, the more we embrace who we are, the more we embrace who we are as a leader, as an influencer, as a mom. But if we don't fully accept being ourselves, then your capacity to influence, to feel good about your life, to feel your purpose, is shrunk and shrunk. So we're gonna talk a little bit about how you being your best you is your greatest purpose and shows your greatest capacity. You make your best contribution by being the most you. I grew up thinking I was gonna be a missionary. I come from the Midwest, I come from Indiana, and I'd never met a woman in ministry. Never. I'd never seen one, I'd never heard of one. People gave me ministry books on missionaries. Again and again and again, my church gave me all these stories of these wonderful women in these wonderful far-off places doing these brilliant things. And all of this courage and daring and leaps of faith to stretch out to someplace so far was both terrifying and exciting. And I kind of grew up with this sense of that's what it looks like to be serving. I graduated high school early. I went to an art school, did ballet and painting and printmaking and pretty much any art you can think of, which is very different than my like very conservative church and then my very liberal art school. And the two were just like right next to each other, but they're both so much me. Graduated school early and went to work in Romania. I worked in Romania and then took refugee supplies to Croatia, worked in the conflicts in Northern Ireland. Just knew that where places were hard, that's where I could serve best. It's this like deep-seated idea that the harder it is, the holier it is. If it's really hard, it must be really good. Okay, keep that in mind if I make things too hard, right? That's like a deep-seated trouble. And so then I went to seminary. I went to seminary at 18. I went in England so that I didn't have to go get an undergrad in the States first. Went straight in and learned that actually there's a whole world. There's a whole world of wonderful things that women can do to serve and to be. And that every place that you are is the place that God has put you to make a difference. So as we go through all of these things, each of those things shapes who I am. Now the truth is that your life has shaped exactly who you are. Your people, your events, your circumstances, each of these little things all throughout your life, the good, the bad, the difficult, has made you into the person, the leader you are now. Okay, let's stop. Everything in your life up until this point is true into who you are. So we can't let go of any of it. We can't say none of it, any of it doesn't matter, any of it isn't important. Each of those things, we all have to look back to go forward. All of the things in your life have made you who you are. Now, as moms, we can very easily get lost in who we are. Maybe that's not everybody, but enough of us. You don't get enough sleep. Somebody else's needs always come first. There's always someone calling or needing or sticky hands on you, or you have lost your place in whatever and you may never find it again because you don't even remember where you put it. And that's just our day-to-day. So then you say, hey, who am I? Well, I don't know. I'm the person who just washed somebody's face and it's still dirty. Like, who am I? That's me. But that also is you and your purpose. And it's not, you're not on hold. You're not waiting until you're in the next stage of life or until you have a position again or your position is all that you do. Some of you work, some of you are at home all the time. Some of you do both. Some of you work from home. Some of you have two nannies and a housekeeper, and yet when your kid is sick, you're still the one who gets called. So all of these things balance to make us the most us, and that your life isn't on hold, and your purpose isn't on hold, and your value isn't on hold until you get a full night's sleep. Each of those things is part of God making you who you are and making your influence where you are now important. As much as each of those things in your life blesses who you are and who you interact with, so the same is for our kids. Each of these things we're doing now grows them into the people that they're going to be. And every day that we don't let ourselves be the best us, we're also saying to them, I need you to be somebody else. And that's a horrible thing when it really hits you, that if I'm not okay with me, I'm probably not okay with you. I need you to be a little better, a little smarter, a little faster. And you don't really believe that, right? You don't really believe that about your kids. But I don't believe that about you. I don't believe any of us needs to be any different than we are. You don't need to be smarter, thinner, like that other person. Exactly who you are is the right person for the right place where you are located. You are the right person. I think that being a mom of young kids more than any other time is a time when you can say, oh, that person does so much better. I wish I were a little more like them. That person is a better me. She's a better mom. She's a better Pinteresty leprechaun job today. I only colored my toilet green and you made special treats for everybody at school. You're better at X. Your hair looks better. You're better at working out. If only I were as confident, as warm. Oh, you're so friendly. I'm not friendly enough. Why am I not friendly enough? I'd be so much better if I have a friend, and it's a joke that I teased my husband a couple years ago, that she's a better version of me. I'm like, she's like 2 years ahead of me with everything I do. She does all the same stuff, but just, she's like a little cuter, a little funnier. She, like, her house is always clean, but otherwise we have all the same qualities. I'm like, how is she a better version of me? If I were just like a little more like her, I could do a better job at the things I'm doing. Well, the truth is, she's a better version of her. And for her circumstances, that's the right thing to be. For me, my circumstances, I'm the right thing to be. And this isn't saying, this isn't giving us all a pass that if we're angry people, that's the right person to be. Or if you, you know, road rage is your joy, that keep it. I'm not saying that at all. That's not my intention. My saying here is that your gifts, your capacity, your talents, the way that you are shaped and made is the right person for the place that you are. And the more that you say yes to that, who you are and how you're made, the more purpose you have, the more fulfillment, the more joy of where you're at. Being your best you is your best contribution, but you have to say, actually, I'm enough. So there's two things that help us know, even in this crazy time, who we are. One is you look back to go forward. Look back at your people, events, and circumstances in your life that are pivotal. What are the things that have made you you? And again, your moms of young kids, we forget stuff. It's really easy to like be in a fugue of, I don't know where the applesauce is. I know you need applesauce 5 minutes ago. I don't know where it is. Please don't cry. It's easy to get there and say, I don't have time to think about my people, events, and circumstances that made me me. But you can. You really can. There are little pieces all through your life that have made your core. And for some of us, it's also your biblical core, your key scripture verses, biographies, or people that have nurtured and made you you. For people who don't have that, it's also just your regular people, events, and circumstances in your life. Your childhood, your early years, all of these pivotal things, because you have to keep hold of what you were meant to do, or it just gets lost. And we all look at somebody else and want to be like them, but you need to be you. So one of my pivotal stories, if you ever meet me in the grocery store, I will be talking to someone about food. I don't know why. I love food, and it's really awkward. And about 3 weeks ago, I was standing with my little basket, and this lovely older woman stood behind me, and she's like, people with young kids should not spend all that money on organic food. She goes, you really need to be saving that money for college. To which I wanted to say, you don't know how smart my kids are. They don't need me. I didn't. I really didn't. But so instead, I launch into like one of the truest things about me. I started telling her why it's important to me that I bought organic food. And it's probably different than everybody else in that I buy organic because of the farmers, because someone picks and harvests and cares for that food and they touch it with their hands. And so for me, I can do with something less to pay a little more to care for the people who take care of my produce. And it's not everybody's truth, but it's a childhood deep ingrained lesson in me. When I was maybe 5 or 6, we went through years in my house when we didn't eat grapes. And I love grapes. And I'm like a little kid, and I'm like, Dad, why can't we have grapes? And Dad is like, we were boycotting grapes. You can't have grapes. And I'm like, I don't understand. I really love grapes. Which I try to remember when my kids do the exact same thing to me. And so my dad is like, okay, I'm going to take you and I'm going to show you. And my dad took me to a farm. And we met who at the time were migrant workers. And Dad said, okay, you're going to see what happens. And we walked through the fields with people, and their hands were literally damaged from pesticides. And so Dad said, these people have very little access to medical care. They work long hours, they work so hard. This hurts them. We can do without it until someone else isn't hurt for our choices. And so for me, this like rooted all the way into my character. It's an event of my life that made me who I am. I now, when I buy stuff, whatever I buy, clothes, food, whatever, part of me always has to think about the people that it affects, because that is my nature. That is me being most me. And so in my life, when I talk to people about that, I'm passionate about that. And it's, I couldn't be passionate about it if that wasn't my truest me, right? That's the me that makes me me, because it's my story all the way in there. It's authentic. It's true. And then when I come to know who Jesus is, it's the idea that God loves those people desperately and cares enough for them that I can sacrifice a little of something else to take care of them. But that's not anybody else's story. If you told that story, it would be like, nah, 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 isn't this interesting? And it's still important and it's still good, but you have your story. You have the thing that's most you, most who you are, that God has grown in you to be in your place, in your time, to be your story that you're telling the person at the grocery store. It's your leadership, it's your purpose, and you have these. Each of you, even on the days that you can't remember it, even if you can't see it, you have these very things that are your gift to the place you are. And nobody else will have those. Even if the person is the better version of me, she doesn't have that story. She doesn't have dancing on broken toes. She doesn't have whatever. She has her stories to be in her place. So who you are, the things, your people, events, and circumstances that have made you you are essential. They're essential to God's gift to where you are, to the places that you are. And so you need to know that who you are is important. Even as a mom, even as sometimes the second, like the second or third or tenth on your list, the person that you are made to be, that you are shaped and guided into being, is important. Now, my other favorite thing is how you find out about yourself. So we don't come to clarity alone. Often, I think I'm X thing, right? And my friends will be like, actually, we love you, but you're not actually good at that. And it's important, right? It's important to have self-awareness. We have to be aware of who we are. We have to know how we work in the world. Like, I'm an outreach person, but I'm an introvert. So how I do things is going to be very different than people expect it to be. I'm not good at small talk. I'm super awkward in big groups of strangers. But it doesn't change that my call is what it is, and I use me the way that I do it best where I am. So you will also have that, your best way of being, and you must have other people. We don't come to clarity alone. You all have a table of people who know you at least a little. They know how you do things well. You have to be able to accept it. You have to be able to take. I mean, one of the things, the joke is that the more self-aware you are, the less defensive. But as soon as someone says something about you, if you get a little prickly in your stomach, it's, why would they think that about me? It probably means you don't actually know yourself as well as you'd like to. One of my favorite things is self-awareness testing. I just love it. I just love learning about how you're made, what you do well, how you do it well. So I'm sure everybody has done something. So Myers-Briggs, StrengthsFinders, Enneagram. How many people have done Enneagram? Anybody? Yes. So the joy of Enneagram is not just that it tells you, it lays out kind of who you are. It gives your shadow side. So your best parts and the parts of you that you don't actually, that you that can become the least healthy. It shows your least healthy patterns, and you learn to notice them. You learn to notice the things that are your defaults so you can turn them into healthy things, because it's all you and it's all essential, but how you use it and how you engage it makes a difference. And I found, especially with my kids, that understanding the things that I do worst or the things that like trigger my least helpfulness, me, to watch as they go off and to be able to say, oh, that's not them at all. That's my whatever ticking and ticking. And it can spiral so quickly, whatever it is. Like, you don't even, until you're aware of it, you don't even see how it ropes you in and takes you down a weird path. This is like, I was in the car with my kids, and we were stopped, and we were going in the store, and I got an email saying that my grades were in. And I'm a grown-up, like, who cares? I mean, I'm paying for this. Nobody cares what my grades are. But my stomach started to knot, and I started to, like, the back of my neck started to prickle, and my kids are like, hey, do you know what happened in Minecraft today? And I'm like, I don't care what happened in Minecraft. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm going through, and I'm literally starting to spin in my head, okay, what if I failed? Okay, if I failed, do I take it again? Do I quit? What do I do instead? And like, literally in the space of about 3 minutes, I went from, I'm a doctoral student, I turned in my work, I really enjoyed it, to, oh no, I failed. I'm gonna drop out of school, and I'll go back to working at the Salvation Army Women and Children's Center. Like, and that's because I am a one, and I am a perfectionist, and I don't know how to not do the best. I don't have a medium. But knowing that about myself and being aware that I don't have a medium, when my kids come home and say, hey, Mom, I got 9 out of 10 on my spelling test. And I say, why didn't you get a 10? What did we do wrong? But because I'm aware of who I am and how I'm made, I get to say, actually, now I know who you are and how you're made. Did you have fun? Was it good? Did you feel good about it? How can I drop my stuff to love them where they are? Well, I have to know who I am, and I have to know what the thing that's triggering is, because it's not going to be yours unless you're a one, and then maybe it is yours, but whatever yours is, it's going to look different. But if you know that about yourself, when it happens, you get to love them as they are, and you get to love you as you are. So you have to know who you are, and one is your people, events, and circumstances, and one is being aware. So I've got two little things for you. Questions one, ask around your table if anybody's done a self-assessment tool. Has anybody in your group done a tool, any one of these, Myers-Briggs, StrengthsFinder, and what did you learn? What did you learn about yourself? Did it help you? Or what's one thing from your childhood? What's one pivotal thing that you've taken with you as a grown-up? Okay, you've got 5 minutes. Hi. That was a quick 5 minutes. Okay. Now, in the middle of your tables are some little post-it notes. I'm a big fan of post-it notes. So everyone grab a post-it note, and on it write, what is one thing that you love about yourself? Or what's one thing that God loves most about you? On your post-it note, everybody get a post-it. What's your thing? What's one thing that you love about you? Or what's one thing that God loves about you? And there's more post-its in the corner if you need them, if you run out. Okay, so we looked at that you must be you, right? You must know who you are. You must know how you're shaped. And you are the best fit for where you are. Now, the thing about being a mom is we're not alone. In fact, we're rarely alone. I never get to be alone. It's true. It's my truth. I'm never alone. It's who you're with, right? Our story our best contribution, the best we do, isn't necessarily shaped by how I best work in the world. It is. I need to know who I am. I need to know how I work best. That's how I work best with my family. That's how I engage best with my neighbors. That's what I do best. But that's not all that I get to do, right? It's not all that any of you get to do. We do what we do with our people. And most of our people are our families. I mean, those are your first people, you and your kids. So how we engage, how we grow our best, is how we grow our best together. So in my first year of doctoral work, we were working on spiritual practices and personal growth and self-awareness and self-definition, which is all so great, right? And I'm looking around and I'm like, oh, this is so good when you're all alone and you make all your choices just for you and you get to decide things like what your schedule is all day by yourself. I don't get to do any of that. Even when I work, I still work everything around, like parent-teacher conferences, school pickup, you got called in sick today, I need to come get you. Where do you need to be? Okay, we're at ballet practice, then we're at the Lux, then you've got soccer. Where am I? What we do? It's what we do together. Most of us don't have the I am me, I am by myself, I am the captain of my very own personal ship. We don't have a personal ship. We've got big ship with a lot of people. And so how do we work best together? So I'm thinking through all of these things that we're doing. Okay, I'm thinking through all these things that me and these older men are doing. Okay, let's just throw this out there. And I'm like, okay, but you're all fighting how to put things like spiritual practices and self-definition and all of these beautiful things, personal growth, into your day. But you don't know how to put it in. You don't know how to fit it in. We all get busy. Everybody's got priorities. Where does it fit? And I went home and I'm looking at my kids and I'm thinking, the things that I learned as a kid are the things that are true about me. They're things that are easy. The things that made me part of my daily life. You brush your teeth every morning, it's habit. You've brushed your teeth as a child, you brush your teeth now, it's part of your day. Asking grown-ups to try and say, hey, can you add 15 minutes of spiritual practices in the morning, in your middle of your day, in your evening, 2:30 tomorrow, 2 weeks off, is awesome. And the people that can do it, I'm so pleased and thankful for and blessed that that's their space in life. But most of us don't have, it's like, when am I going to add anything? Well, one, we have to learn who we are, and we have to learn to say yes to the things that we're best at and say keep saying yes till we find our, and you have to say no. You have to say no to the stuff that's least like you to make time. But I was working on this project, and we were working on it with all adults, and I wanted to know what it would look like with kids. I wanted to know what it would look like if my kids grew up with spiritual practices. What does it look like if instead of adding things as we're adults, as we're mature, when we've arrived, if as we're immature, as we're small, little happy children, if it's part of our regular day? So some of you, even with your little babies, pray over your kids or do devotions, read your Bible, whatever. Like that's still part of how you raise your kids, or you have particular holidays, rituals, rhythms, stuff that's their story, that's going to be part of their story. So we were working on this project called Threefold Listening. And it's where you and a partner, usually like three of you, would sit together and the person would tell a story and you don't get to intervene and you don't get to answer the questions. They talk and then you look and say, what is God saying in this? Where is God in this? How does this Where is God speaking to you? Because we believe that people, events, and circumstances all through your life, God is shaping you. So you look at the circumstances that are happening now and say, what is God doing in that? So they had all these tests to go along with this, like, who's spiritually mature enough to do this? When in your stage of life does this fit? How do we... And I'm sitting there thinking, you know what? I bet my kids could do this better than you. I really think they could. I think that my kids naturally can, like, ask questions like this. What's God doing in this? Well, that kid was being really mean to me, and Mom, I want to tell you this story about this kid today who punched me in the nose. And I want to sit, and I want to hear his story. And as his mom, I want to say, sweetheart, don't hang around with mean people. Stay away from that kid. He's not nice. Or can we talk to your principal, or what can we do? But with threefold listening, you don't. You say, I'm sorry, that was hard. Did you see God in that anywhere? What do you think God's doing there? And my little tiny 6-year-old son looks at me and says, do you know what? I think sometimes people are really hurt on the inside and they want to throw it on somebody else. So maybe if I can be really nice to him but not let it get on me, God can meet him there. And he's little and that's his story. And that's the truth of him. And so I started, when we started doing these things with adults, I started doing them with my kids. Because kids are naturals. They swim in this. They don't need to be taught it. And I made my project on families, not on adults. So a year ago, we started this with our kids. And I invited 15 other families to try this. Just this very basic, in your day. 3 times a day, we put it in sometime. Either we read over breakfast to get them ready for their day, then we go to school or whatever. On their way home from school, when they're telling me stories, which is like their natural time to tell me stories, or at night before bed, tell me something about your day, let's talk about this. And we tried this. And they tell me their stories, and now they look for what God is doing. It's like a natural part of who they are. What is God doing in my day? What's happening? So I started out asking 15 other families to try this with me. 4 said, that's crazy. We don't do that sort of thing. No. The others started, and other people in... joined us. They heard about it. I mean, people heard about it, like I was talking at my running group, and someone's like, can I try? And 2 Jewish families asked if they could join in. And I'm like, we're kind of really Christian, but we're super, you're welcome if it doesn't offend you. And they're like, we're not offended if you're not. I'm like, awesome. We're not offended if you're not. Awesome, let's try it. And so we just, different people joined in as we went and tried it. Now, people's stories with trying practices with their kids have been really awesome for me. The stories are just so good, and it just grew and grew. So one of my friends, she and her sons, and she has 1 son who's 3, and 1 who's 4, and 1 who's 7, and 1 who's 9. And they've been doing this since September. And in January, my friend's brother passed away. They're really close. They live next door to each other. Their kids all grew up together. And they've been practicing spiritual practices together for months now. This is just part of their day, part of how they think of themselves. And they're at the funeral, and the oldest son, who's 9, stood up. And he's like, I just want to say, I don't know what God is doing in this. I don't know why my uncle isn't with us anymore. But I'm glad I started asking, because now at least I'm looking. I'm looking to see what God is doing. And it's heartbreaking and it's horrible, but I'm glad they're looking, and I'm glad my kids are looking. And so this grew into other stuff. These families, now that they're trying this, wanted to try other things. So my oldest son he can be a grump. He's a kid. He can be a grump. And I didn't want him to be a grump because it's tiring. And so we started practices of gratitude. Kid's got a gratitude journal. Every day, when he was little, when he was 3 and 4, he drew pictures and we used a camera. Now that he's older, he actually has to write it. And he would take a picture, we have like an Instamax, of one thing that he was super grateful for. And he would put it in his book, and it makes him look for things that he's happy about. It makes him look for things that he's grateful for. Even with your little kids. Obviously not your babies, sorry, everyone. Think about this for the future. And it made a difference. It made a difference to how he does things. He's more engaged. He looks for good things. Now, my kids all have journals. I promised that I wouldn't show too much of what they do. But they've started practicing spiritual practices. And then they invited their friends in, and people see them. And people see them logging at the Nature Center. And this is part of us being a missional family, that they are them where they go, just like you are you where you go. And the things that they do and they think about and they care about influence their friends and their neighbors and people we meet at the lagoon. And people see them with their little nature journals taking their pictures. What are you doing? I'm writing the things that I'm thankful for in my book. And that's their natural conversation with them being themselves, but also with us as parents who focus that. So they have their funny little kid books. And they don't look anything like yours. They don't look anything like mine. It's them being them, and it's them growing as these particular people. So as we all work this out, as me and these now 35 families are working out what it's like to practice these things, we started to think about what does it mean to get intentional with this. Not only who am I, but who are we? What makes us us? And how do we put that out in the world better, right? What's not only my contribution, what's ours? So, my family, we're artsy. My kid like learned to throw a ball yesterday. That's not even a lie. Like, your kid's been playing soccer since before he could walk. Not us. We are not a lot of things. There's a lot of things that we are not. What we are is super artsy, and that's the places that we are in the world. My 5-year-old son is in ballet class, and they wrote a song based on a book they read last week, and they're going to perform it in the talent show. Like, we're weird artsy people, and the people that we're around are often weird artsy people, and that is like our place. That's the place that we are in the world because that's natural to us. And so in January, we all sat around and said, okay, what do we do best? What's Hobson-y, as we like to say? And my kids are like, we're artists. We make things beautiful. We add beauty. And I'm like, okay, what's something that we as a family can do in our next year to add beauty? So everybody like throws in what they do best. We can go to the senior center and play a song. And they're little. So what do they do as the little people that they are being their best self? They all made cards. They all painted these little cards that are thank you cards that they carry in their backpacks. And when we go places or when they're thankful to their ballet teacher or when somebody does something kind, they have all these like little handmade thank you cards. And they're like, it makes people feel special. It's beautiful. One thing that we found is that a lot of people that we know don't have any time. And they don't get to see beauty because they feel harassed. Like, I've got to get somewhere, I've got something to do, we've got to get to sports practice, we're way too late. But what we love is food and beauty. So we've started making beautiful food and taking it to neighbors. We don't invite you to our house because our house is filthy because we're dirty artists who don't have any time. whose mom's doing a doctorate. And so we don't, our hospitality is to not invite you in. But I can bring you dinner, and you can take a night off, and you can enjoy dinner that somebody else made with tons of love and lots of organic food, because that's who we are. And then they get a break and they get a chance to see beauty. And that's us being us and putting it out in the world. Those are the us-isms. Now, our friends are the opposite of us. They're like, dad used to be a ball player, like a professional ball player. Mom was a cheerleader. They are sporty people. We love them. They love us. We're nothing alike. And they, when they did their whole assessment, I'm like, what do we do best? Well, we're sporty. That's what we do best. And instead of going and coaching the local team, which is kind of what the dad was thinking he'd do, and his daughters were like, I don't want to play. They said, you know what we can do? We can make a dedicated practice. Every week, we're going to go to the green space by our house, and on Thursday afternoons, we're going to play. And anybody who passes by, we're going to invite in. All the kids in the neighborhood. And so people know that they're there, and they meet with them, and they engage with them. And that's how they are their best selves, the most them, where they're at, and welcoming others in. So you have things that are most you. What's an activity or a something, a concern, a family quality that's most your family? What's one thing, one way that you can do that better together? And it can be really small. It doesn't have to be like, we really care about the refugees, so we're all going to go now to Romania and work in an encampment. You're like, actually, in the stage of life, I'm not taking my baby. We're not doing the shots. We're not. This isn't our stage for that. But there are things. Everybody has something you can do where you are, how you are best. There's something. We're each shaped for something. Where you are, how you are, your qualities, your family, the people you're with. Who are you with? Who are the natural people? How do you guys grow together? So take just a minute and think about questions two. Either practice that you can add to your family, or what's one thing that your family does and shares? Okay, grab another post-it note. Hi. Okay, grab another post-it note. Sorry, that was so quick. What is one thing that you do as a family that you love? Grab another post-it note. What's one thing that you love to do as a family? Okay, maybe you're not at the love stage. What's one thing that causes you less grief to do as a family? Like, what do people cry about the least? Okay, let's not even, don't cry about it. What do people actually put their shoes on for? Is there anything that your family does that your kids will get their shoes on to do? Okay, write it on your post-it. Put your little two little post-its together. Okay, so we know who we are, right? You're all self-aware now. Everybody knows who they are, what they do best. You know who you're with. You're with your family. You're with your kids, and you have your own way and place that you do things. Who you are, who you're with. Now, our last thing we're going to talk about is where you are. And one thing of where you are is the stage that everybody's in. You're there. You're meant to be there. We're not waiting for it to get over. We're all where we're at. And let's embrace it. Let's be the people that we are, where we are, both in time and place. We're also in your spaces and places that you go. Where do you go regularly? Where are the places and people that you run into all the time? So, some of you, it's drop-off for preschool. Some of you, it's your regular grocery store or Target, your Target. Everybody has a Target. My friend Robin is at the back there. Hi, Robin. Sorry to call you out. I see Robin every day, practically, because Robin and I both walk in our neighborhood to school. Drop our children off, and I go there. That is, it's not exciting. It's not like, guess where I went today? I went to school drop off. But it's my place. I meet people I engage at school drop off. Twice a day, every day. I see the same people, they see me, we have our 2-minute conversations while one of us is chasing our children, and we know that I might have started a conversation with you, and I might only get 3 words in, and I'll walk away, and none of us are offended, because that's our place. Our place is school drop-off. And I, for a while, will admit that I felt stuck. I was looking around at my places, and I'm like, how did I get here? I'm like a middle-aged suburban mom. I had no intention of becoming a middle-aged suburban mom, like none. How? And kept thinking like, what do I need to engineer to not be here? What do I need to do instead? Like, train to be a missionary, ended up in San Diego, in Encinitas even. Like, I live in a very specific place. I live in like this little pocket of awesome, actually. Yeah, Encinitas. But it wasn't at all where I had pictured myself. It wasn't in my head where I thought my space would be. But my people, events, and circumstances all led me to be a middle-aged mom in Encinitas. So I am where I am supposed to be. But how, I have no idea, and I couldn't have known what that would look like. So when I started going through all of this, it's like, why am I made the way that I'm made with the family I am in the place that I'm at? Like, so I grew up, I went to a dance and art school, and I learned a bunch of languages. My ballet teacher taught us Russian. And my family at home spoke Spanish, though my dad never wanted us to learn because he thought that it would be shameful, and so we're all terrible at Spanish, even though it's our dad's first language. But there's all of these things, they're called entrustments, all these little pieces that make you who you are, and this is what mine are. So how am I me in Encinitas? Well, I have a 5-year-old son who's in love with ballet. He's been in love with ballet his whole life. I mean, true. When he was 3 and he went to preschool, his being most him means that he took the iPad with dancers, with male dancers doing ballet for his show and tell. And he asked to do ballet, and I said, let's try karate. And he said, let's do ballet. And I took him to ballet because I want him to be the most him, just like I need to be most me, and he loves it, and he thrives. Well, a friend of mine from church recommended his ballet studio, and his ballet studio happens to be run by a family of Russians. So now, I had a Russian ballet master, my son has a Russian ballet master, lots of European families go to this particular place, speaking lots of different languages, many of which, either on my travels or in school, I learned. At least a little of. And so I am at a place where I use all the things that I was meant to use that have grown up in me totally just as I am being me at the place where my family goes. And this is my truth of how our family is missional. Well, this is also the truth of how your family is, because the places you go are the places you need to be. And the places that you need to be who you are and how you're made. And just by doing that, you start these conversations. So there's this famous missiologist. Her name is Rebecca Lewis. And Rebecca Lewis does what's called fringe work. And it is the deepest, darkest places where no one has ever heard anything. You go in and you make big changes. You feed people who are not being fed. You clothe people who are not being clothed. You hold lepers when they're dying. Like, she is on frontier, deep places. And the idea is that you have contextual ministry, and that you go into some place and you help people stay where they are instead of pulling them out. For it used to be that people would go be missionaries places, and there'd be this thing called an upward shift, where you became a Christian and you would leave your community and kind of go into a Christian community. And Rebecca Lewis and this whole team wants people to stay where they are, in their neighborhoods, in their places, in their natural context. But the whole point that I argue with these wonderful people is that they say the whole point of how this works is that somebody has to be with great needs and deprived, and somebody has to have more and more resources and give them to them. And that way, that is the picture of how it works, because then they can't, you cannot ask for anything back. And if you ask for nothing back, then you are doing this true thing, this beautiful thing that makes a difference. Well, I like to tease this lovely panel of people and say, have you ever been a mother? Because on any given day, when someone gives you something, you may not be able to give it back. You may not even remember that they brought you dinner last week. You do things in your community, in your context, without expecting return all the time. And it's not about resources. It's not about having and not having. It's about community. You are people who give without expecting back pretty much most of your day. That's what it means to be a mother. That's what it means to be in a community of other families. That when I can pick up from school and you can't, I can pick up from school. And I'm not waiting for you to say it's your turn. I'm not waiting to have it back. And so my thought is, you don't have to go someplace where you have and someone else doesn't. You don't have to be in a liminal space. You being you where you are, offering yourself and your gifts and your family's gifts, is you being missional. Your best contribution is being the person with a God-given capacity and responsibility influencing the specific group of people that you're around naturally every day with your talents and gifts. But you have to know what your talents and gifts are. You have to know who you are. You have to know the people that you're with, your family mostly, but the people that you're with and that you're working with. And you have to know where you are. Where are the places in your life that you naturally engage, and how do you do that well? That is you being missional, but it takes some intentional, who am I, who am I with, where are these places? And you have to say no to the things that aren't most you, so you have time to do some of these things. And you have to add them in naturally to what you're already doing. Or one, you won't do it because you don't have time. Or two, it won't be natural and it won't stick. So you have to look at some of these things. So there's a third question on your little sheets. But I want to just ask, I don't have much time. Are there any questions that you have? Is there anything anybody wants to ask? Oh, hi.
Yeah, if we want to be a part of what you're doing with these 35 or so families, how can we get more information about that?
Okay, my email is Thea, T-H-I-A. Hobson, H-O-B-S-O-N, at iCloud.com. And you can just email me, or Cynthia Hobson on Facebook. You can just Facebook message me. And I'd be happy to share that. Or if you want help on stuff like how do you find out who you are, self-awareness, engage with that a little more if you want some help or some questions. I'm totally happy to talk through that with you. Anybody else? Okay, we don't have time for the third question here, but you can look it up yourself. And your little post-its, your third post-it is, where is a place that you go or a thing you do where your heart sings? What's the thing that when you do it, you feel most like, I love this. Or when you're chatting about it, you just go on and on, and you can't stop. What's that thing for you? So you have those three things. And those three things, if you look at them, tell you a lot about who you are, who your family is. And they're a really good place to start.
You have time.
Do I?
Yeah.
Not just 2 minutes?
Not just 2 minutes. Because
okay.
You have a discussion in, you're good.
Oh, I thought that might... Okay.
If you want to discuss that third question.
Well, okay. Sorry, I wrapped up. I thought that I had like 2 minutes, so I was pulling it quick. So your third question was, as I just spilled water everywhere. If your question is my shoes, they just spilled the water. What is a place or activity that you attend regularly that your family can share more in or that you can be more who you are? What's a place that you're already at that you can be more intentionally present? Does that make sense? Yeah? That's your missional place, a place where you already are. I'm so sorry. What you're already doing that instead of running in, running out, you can be there. Okay? Discuss. Sorry, guys.
Oh, I know you're totally fine. Sorry, please, you could have that.
Oh, I have one more thing that I'm going to show you really quickly. It has nothing to do with anything except that I really love it. If you have trouble with Bible stories with kids or knowing what to do or being like, my child is 4. I don't know what devotions look like. Or even where to start yourself. We found a lot of people who just are like, I don't know where to start. These are two of my favorites. This is the most beautiful stories from the Bible. And... they're just like a gorgeous, gorgeous picture. And then it's a flap and it's a little story. But the stories are good and helpful. And this is something that we can do over breakfast. Don't have to take any extra time. It doesn't take any more. It's just a beautiful something. And we've cycled through this book maybe 4 times. Just do it, do something else for a while, do it. Because it's so whole story. Really cool, beautiful, but fast. Nobody gets bored, nobody wanders off, doesn't take too much time. We go over it when they eat their breakfast. The most beautiful stories from the Bible. And I'll just stick it on the table and you can look at it. My other favorite, and so I'm a bit obnoxious about Bible stories. I generally think everyone does a terrible job. I'll just admit it. I'm a snob about it. So this is done so well. It's called The Biggest Story. So pretty. And it's longer. Not as good for little tiny guys, but... put it in your hopper for the future if you have small kids. Because it's just really, it's a great way to start Bible stories with your kids. Thank you.